In the political spirit of never letting a good manufactured crisis go to waste, this crisis is being used to usher in the World Economic Forum's Great Reset and Fourth Industrial Revolution agendas, as well as UN Agenda 2030. I suggest that you read about these as well. These agendas aim to redefine the current social contract, making the world more inclusive, focusing on stakeholder rather than shareholder capitalism through strong global cooperation. This new renaissance and fourth industrial revolution, the first three industrial revolutions being the steam engine, science and mass production, and digital technology. The fourth industrial revolution will be marked by the digitalization of everything and the merging of the physical with the artificial and biological through things like 3D printing, the Internet of Things, artificial intelligence, machine learning, robotics, genetic engineering, and new methods of drug discovery. It will decouple economic growth from natural and human resource constraints, while making inequality highly visible and also much less acceptable. These technologies are ready for deployment, but need our implementation, adoption, and most importantly, our consent. And COVID has made our consent almost forced. Mainstream science has long been corrupted under a false guiding theory that was pushed by elitist billionaire John D. Rockefeller. Our scientific observations are forced to fit into this false germ theory, and that causes us to frequently make correct observations, but still draw incorrect conclusions. That's why we make no progress. No matter what you ultimately choose to believe, there is no vaccine that is going to allow us to go back to normal. That's not part of the plan. It never has been. But the longer you think that we might, the longer you will self-justify the lockdowns in the name of uniting around a common enemy and saving lives. Meanwhile, the establishment, the real enemy, will divert your attention and commit financial fraud of epic proportions. It's happening before your eyes right now. And in the name of public health, our government can and will do just about anything. We must achieve what I call herd immunity, where we are able to separate ourselves from this virus of the mind, the social and societal pressures to fit in and conform to the propaganda of the establishment, and the uninformed first-order thoughts of the herd of sheeple that follow it. COVID is the symptom, not the virus. And while the masses play checkers and the intellectuals play chess, your overlords are playing 5D chess. You might be able to recognize a political chess game that is unfolding before our very eyes, too. The foolish think that it's over, but believe me, this is very much just the beginning. You may think that my views border on conspiracy theory, but allow me to remind you about this purposefully derogatory term. A theory is a group of connected ideas that attempt to explain something, and a conspiracy is a secret plan. Is that what I'm doing? Well, yes, but the term itself is a mechanism for the system to discredit those that question it and attempt to see behind the curtain where they're not supposed to look. If I had a choice, I would much prefer that you call me a heretic or rational skeptic, but that is not for me to choose. Now, I'm not sure how all this will make you feel. I expect some eye rolls, some name-calling from the small and simple-minded, some confusion, and maybe some absolute terror and despair. I would hope that this message makes you angry, vigilant, and ready to take action. But if it makes you feel hopeless and powerless, I'm telling you that you've come to the wrong conclusion. This game is all designed to distort our reality, divide us, and make us feel powerless, because in reality, our individual, and especially our collective power, is so great. The elite, through occult symbolism and coded language, have foretold of the problems to come. But you have to pay attention. And at the same time, they have also foretold the solutions that are ready for these same problems. And by recognizing this, we can take advantage. Life has granted me great freedom, and by association, time. Time that I use to aggressively and relentlessly research, learn, and invest, because I love asymmetric information strategy games and decision making based on a distribution of probabilistic future outcomes. And through all of this research and all of this learning, I have been pulled into a community that is bringing together the world's brightest minds and greatest ambitions. Blockchain technology, or as you may know it, crypto or cryptocurrency, will disrupt and revolutionize nearly every aspect of the economy. It is no longer a matter of if, but a matter of when. This will be the greatest wealth creation event of our lifetimes, and maybe of all time, and you are here to be a part of it. You have probably heard of Bitcoin, and may even have a Coinbase account. Congratulations, you are ahead of the curve. We are transitioning from the innovator phase to the early adopter phase on this technological adoption curve. Look at the Diffusion of Innovations by Everett Rogers for more on this. But at this point, few understand the depth, the elegance, and the implications of the open source blockchain ecosystem that is being built by independent developers all over the world. On January 9th, 2021, will mark an occult symbolic 33 years since the Economist magazine cover article titled "Get Ready for the Phoenix." The article explored a theoretical currency called Phoenix, like the one that arises from the ashes of calcination. It was foretold, and now it is here. Here's a short passage from the 1988 article. 30 years from now, Americans, Japanese, Europeans, and people in many other rich countries, and some relatively poor ones, will probably be paying for their shopping with the same currency. Prices will be quoted not in dollars, yen, or D-marks, but in, let's say, the Phoenix. The Phoenix will be favored by companies and shoppers because it will be more convenient than today's national currencies, which by then will seem a quaint cause of much disruption to economic life in the last 20th century. Preparing the way for the Phoenix will mean fewer pretended agreements on policy and more real ones. It will mean allowing and then actively promoting the private sector use of an international money alongside existing national monies. That would let people vote with their wallets for the eventual move to full currency union. The Phoenix would probably start as a cocktail of national currencies, just as the special drawing right is today. In time, though, its value against national currencies would cease to matter, because people would choose it for its convenience and the stability of its purchasing power. When Facebook announced its crypto project Libra, now called Diem, on June 18th, 2018, exactly 30 years after the Economist article, everyone took notice. At least everyone that matters. The World Economic Forum, the Bank of International Settlements, the International Monetary Fund, and leaders from G7 and G20 countries. They immediately recognized that what Facebook was proposing, a cryptocurrency backed by the IMF's Special Drawing Rights, or SDR. The SDR is a basket of five currencies composed of the dollar, euro, British pound, Chinese yuan, and Japanese yen. This project had the potential to disrupt and completely destabilize the global monetary system, especially if it was adopted at scale too quickly. And with Facebook's almost 3 billion worldwide users, this was a distinct possibility. We should also note that The Economist magazine is owned in large part by the previously mentioned Rothschild banking dynasty. But anyway, SDRs, particularly those backed with a certain ratio of oil and gold, are quite compelling as the neutral reserve asset that the global economy so desperately needs. It serves to rebalance the system and prevent the buildup of imbalances. And it can rewrite the value of global sovereign debt, which isn't good for the debt holders. The problem is that the primary world debt holders are holders of US Treasury bonds, and that happens to be the Federal Reserve, US commercial banks, pension funds, and the rest of the 1%. Now, we can understand why the system does everything in its power, committed to destructive survivalist acts to keep the Ponzi scheme alive. English economist John Maynard Keynes proposed a nearly identical SDR-type solution to that of Facebook. It was then called a bancor, meaning the French for bank gold, at the Bretton Woods Conference in 1944. But Keynes' proposal was denied in favor of establishing the dollar as the world's reserve currency, convertible to gold at a fixed price, as we've already mentioned. This idea was revived in 2008 by the governor of the People's Bank of China, that claimed national currencies were not suitable as world reserves due to something called the Triffin Dilemma. The Triffin Dilemma asserts that reserve currency issuers face the impossible task of trying to simultaneously achieve their own domestic policy goals while meeting other nations' demand for currency. Basically, when there is growth in the global economy, and thus demand for dollars, the supplier has to run large deficits to supply them. The United Nations and IMF have since supported this idea. So the search for a credibly neutral reserve asset is on, and blockchain provides the perfect framework. Facebook will not be the one to issue such a currency, as they have been forced by regulators to scale back their plan. But you should expect them to issue one or more cryptocurrencies called stablecoins that are backed by various fiat currencies and their associated government bond securities in 2021. This will happen much sooner than you think. Banks around the world are looking closely into CBDCs, or central bank digital currencies. In October, a group of financial institutions, including the Federal Reserve, Bank of Canada, Bank of England, and European Central Bank, published a report that outlined critical features for a successful CBDC. China has already begun testing a digital version of the yuan, and the ECB is said to be far along in the development of a digital euro. These types of currencies will provide interesting, at least to central bankers, mechanisms for deploying stimulus that can target certain parts of populations or sectors in the economy, with digitally programmed rules or behavioral economics for how it might be spent. This is how universal basic income will be deployed to ease the pain of deflation. Imagine the scenario where central bank digital currency, or UBI, could be easily attached to a digital vaccine record that also lives on a blockchain, where if you don't get the vaccine, you don't get the money. Or money that is programmatically only allowed to be spent on certain goods, like groceries. More likely, in my opinion, and more useful to the central bankers, are currencies able to mathematically enforce negative interest rates, or collect new kinds of taxes to steal your wealth. Get ready, they'll be here before you know it. While it is certain to me that blockchain will allow for the creation of what the global monetary system needs, that's an apolitical, borderless, mathematically sound and predictable, rules-based money. But money is hardly the most interesting implementation of this technology. It is merely the first, albeit a good one. I have the equivalent of a Swiss bank account in my pocket that is earning me passive income right now, just using dollar-backed stablecoins that earn interest rates far greater than any of your savings accounts. I get paid by multiple parties to browse the internet, too, that simultaneously protect my privacy. Pretty cool. I can buy stock derivatives also. And that may not seem special. Anyone can buy stocks. But when I can use those stocks as tokenized collateral to borrow money and make a mortgage payment, then the game changes. I can teach you how to do all of these things, and then some. And it's all thanks to the rise of DeFi, or decentralized finance, that put the capabilities of central banks, commercial banks, and hedge funds directly in our control. Faith in democracy is clearly being destroyed. And when we ultimately give up on this illusion, DAOs, or decentralized autonomous organizations, will be the future of government structure and facilitate the coordination of people and resources using quadratic voting mechanisms for the funding of public goods. NFTs, or non-fungible tokens, will change the ways we think about digital art, video games, memberships, contracts, and insurance. Social media will be completely disrupted too and become censorship resistant, thank God. And we will have the choice to use and monetize our own personal data rather than letting Facebook and Google sell it for profit to target us with intrusive ads. The list goes on. Essentially, anything that can be expressed in code will end up on the blockchain, from election votes to birth certificates to college degrees, all governed by open source and fully auditable code in a transparent, immutable, permissionless, and trustless ecosystem that is backed by the most advanced cryptography known to man. No centralized points of failure, no middlemen extracting value for nothing. Blockchain will eat the world. And my thesis is that blockchain is the hedge, the only hedge, against our broken monetary system and will redefine money as we know it completely. Even if the current system somehow manages to persist, it cannot do so without blockchain. And if it doesn't, blockchain will be there to allow us to coordinate and rebuild in our own vision. And it all began with Bitcoin. This grandfather of all cryptocurrencies, created by the mythical Satoshi Nakamoto, whose identity is still unknown and will probably continue to be, served to articulate the very important idea of scarcity in a digital context. It sought to be what we call sound money that protects against inflation and the obvious dangers, at least to Satoshi, of the fractional reserve banking system, while being backed by cryptography and sound economic principles. It also solved what is known as the double spending problem. Bitcoin solved this through a consensus algorithm, where nodes, or participants in its network, were incentivized to maintain a common, universal ledger system, basically a shared database. Bitcoin accomplishes this with what's called a proof-of-work consensus algorithm. I'll spare you the technical details on this for a future episode, but as far as blockchains go, we should understand that Bitcoin is very simple and minimally programmable. And in this case, I think that should be considered a feature and not a bug. Bitcoin's first block in the chain, the Genesis block, was mined on January 3rd, 2009, a happy belated 12th birthday. And the block included the following text, a headline from a newspaper article: Chancellor on brink of second bailout for banks. This served to establish the date of the Genesis block, but also sent a pointed message to the few that were paying attention. Bitcoin wasn't always thought of as digital gold like it is today. Rather, more of a peer-to-peer electronic payment system. Its potential value wasn't always expressed by institutions in the media the same way that it is today either. Institutions like JP Morgan and BlackRock have changed their public stance and narrative from things like Bitcoin is an index of money laundering to Bitcoin can possibly evolve into a global market asset. Or from Bitcoin is a fraud to Bitcoin value could triple and challenge gold all over the course of a few years. But remember, the narrative is everything, and rarely do institutions, governments, and politicians say what they mean. They say what they want you to think as it best serves them, in this case, so that they could accumulate Bitcoin without you driving up their prices. I guess if you aren't reading between the lines, you aren't actually reading at all. You will not win this game if you don't train yourself to read between the lines and identify the blatant hypocrisy that we are bombarded with by the mainstream media. Stop listening to them. Not only do they use you, they hate you. And when you see it, you will experience freedom like you have never experienced before. I'll do an episode on surveillance capitalism and the strategies of deception that the media uses to manipulate the public sometime in the future. But anyway, Bitcoin. So even today, Mr. Millionaire's financial advisor or wealth manager isn't going to recommend Bitcoin, or any blockchain for that matter. They won't recommend it because, one, they don't understand the technology. And two, which is likely the reason for number one, they don't receive a commission when you buy. But investment is coming. We have already seen the first public companies enter the space, the likes of Square and PayPal. They've joined the crypto native innovators and early adopters. Next will come the hedge funds, as ETFs become available, then the family offices and endowments, followed by the pensions and late to the game retail investors. There is a significant wall of money that hasn't been able to invest in the space due to the small market caps of blockchains. The total market cap of all crypto has risen from about $500 billion to $1 trillion as of recording today, just in the past few weeks. For reference, $1 trillion is roughly half the market cap of Apple. The lack of tax and other regulatory clarity has also kept money on the sidelines as well. But when asset prices sufficiently increase, then the likes of BlackRock can pour billions into the market without taking on too much risk. And this further increases prices. Then more money can flow in, and prices will increase yet again, in a reflexive loop that will change the world of finance. Did you know that the World Economic Forum, yes, they keep coming up, and I don't want to give them more energy than they deserve, but the World Economic Forum believes that 10% of global GDP may be on a blockchain by 2025. Global GDP is roughly $80 trillion. Let that sink in. But there's a little problem. There's nothing without problems. Bitcoin may actually be in direct opposition with the wildly popular and pervasive climate change-related agendas. And we won't go too far down that road today, but we recognize this problem nonetheless. Bitcoin, as a result of its proof-of-work consensus algorithm, is very energy-intensive. Estimates show that a single Bitcoin transaction requires the same amount of energy that it would take to power the average American home for more than 3 weeks. If the Bitcoin network were a country, it would rank something like 40th in energy usage, equivalent to Israel, Switzerland, or Denmark. The computation required to run the network is only going to increase. So to solve this, we basically have two options. One, develop vastly cheaper electricity for the world through technological advancement. Or two, subsidize electricity for this use case through government and centralize Bitcoin mining so that we might realize lower cost structures. Well, number one remains a work in progress and a major challenge, and our hopes rest on things like nuclear fusion. But number two is already happening in China. I think we mentioned them earlier and their role in all of this mess. But yes, the Chinese government has been subsidizing electricity for Bitcoin miners, and they have concentrated so much Bitcoin mining power that they control an estimated 50 to 65% of the total Bitcoin mining power in the world. The United States is second in the 7 to 15% range, but Russia is roughly equivalent to the US. And don't forget Iran and Venezuela. They rank 6th and 10th on this list. I'm not sure I want to buy a cryptocurrency controlled by my government's enemies. But I'm one of my government's enemies too. So I'll have to get back to you on that. Issues aside, cryptocurrency was by far the best performing asset class of 2020. Crude oil was down 70%. The S&P 500 was up 15%, with big tech outperforming. Gold was up 25%, and Bitcoin was up 300%. If you bet on stocks, you won. If you bet on crypto, you got hilariously rich. And the best is yet to come. I first started seriously investing in this space in 2016. I experienced a meteoric rise and a more than painful multi-year bear market that followed. But I went irresponsibly long, all in March, being greedy when others were fearful, and fearful when others were greedy. I'll leave you with one blockchain thesis before we move on, that it will be Ethereum, not Bitcoin, that changes the world. Ethereum is going to evolve into what we call a triple point asset, meaning it's a capital asset that produces income, a commodity asset that is widely used and exchanged, and a store of value, all in one. This will allow Ethereum to become the settlement layer for the new global economy, and it will process hundreds of trillions in transactions. Do you know what happens when infinite dollars try to find their way into mathematically limited crypto? The phoenix will rise. I look forward to many, many episodes on this topic in the future because I don't want you to miss out. I've got plenty to share on more traditional asset classes too. For those that are into the safety and familiarity of the stock market. Those of you that got into trading stocks this year, yes, I'm talking to you, Robinhooders. I am certain that you did quite well, provided that you didn't panic sell in March. Otherwise, you experienced and are still experiencing a historic bull run. We know that the markets are dislocated from reality. We can thank the Fed for that. But where does it end? The stock market has essentially become the American economy, and this bubble can certainly grow larger. How do I know it's a bubble? Well, do you honestly think that Airbnb is worth more than almost all major hotel chains combined? Is Tesla worth more than the next 9 largest car companies combined? PE ratios, or price to earnings, for stocks are in dangerous, uncharted territory. But there are a few extraordinary opportunities if you still want to play the stock market game. Things like electric vehicles and LiDAR, online gambling, and my personal favorite and expertise, cannabis. Cannabis is still a relatively new industry. Although the first cannabis companies began trading on public markets in 2012, and industry leaders like Canopy Growth have been trading since 2014, much has happened since then. In an industry that has been able to compress months of growth into days or weeks. In the beginning, legalization in Colorado and Canada were major catalysts. Many companies were pump and dump scams. Real companies were manipulated by rampant short selling. The sector was dragged down by the vape scare and the lack of clarity on regulation. Also, in the past, companies were valued based on their funded cultivation capacity and the number of licenses held in hand, rather than any real business operating metrics. There still exists a sort of arbitrage opportunity for investors like you to take advantage of. Canadian companies have been able to list on major US exchanges for a few years because in Canada, cannabis is federally legal. But the best of the best opportunities in this space, the US multi-state operators, have been confined to going public via reverse takeover and listing only on Canadian exchanges. This has made it difficult for the waiting flood of US capital, and particularly that from large institutions, to be deployed. This window of opportunity is closing quickly, and when it does, some of these companies, who are now scaled operators, will be on $1 billion or more annual run rates, and valuations will soar. So we need to act fast. Cannabis is an excellent opportunity because it is one of only a few industries that are currently trading at fair revenue and EBITDA multiples and will experience guaranteed demand growth as markets open up. The rise of the cannabis industry couldn't be more timely, as it generates much-needed tax revenue for state budgets that were ravaged by pandemic lockdowns. Cannabis is also showing plenty of promise on the medical front for issues like sleep, anxiety, depression, PTSD, and more, all of which were exacerbated by these same COVID lockdowns. And just wait until you see the research about cannabis and COVID. The game will change. 2020 was a breakout year for US multi-state operators, fueled by better than expected growth in large Illinois, Florida, and Pennsylvania markets that are still and will continue to be supply constrained, meaning that everything sells out, no matter what the quality, and prices are stable. Expect 2021 to be a year of growth driven by billion-dollar mergers and acquisitions, with dominoes falling for the opening of markets in the Northeast Corridor as New York, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Maryland, Virginia, and more are expected to follow in the footsteps of Massachusetts and New Jersey and take their current medical programs full adult use recreational. We will even begin to see the emergence of regionally or nationally recognized brands that will cause the winners in this space to grow like weeds. I was able to enter the cannabis space 7 years ago in a move that many of my engineering peers at the time considered career suicide. But I knew this time would come. It was all too obvious. As an industry insider for those 7 years, I had the opportunity to help build and guide some of the highest performing companies in the space. And now I would like to translate that into value for you. Here is one last thesis to leave you with. Due to alcohol prohibition from 1920 to 1933, the government missed out on much needed tax revenue that would have helped it during the Great Depression. They are not going to do the same this time. No matter what we invest in order to be successful, we need to be early. If we can't be early, be at least timely. But we also have to have conviction, and most importantly, we have to be correct. During this alchemical calcination, I have asked you to question yourself. Many of your most closely held truths and the motives of everyone that you have ever been taught to trust. So it would be irresponsible of me not to call my own motives into question. Could I be misleading you as well? You must always DYOR. That's do your own research and verify the things that I've said, because I cannot change your mind. I don't want to. That is a task for you and you only. And failing to make your own choices will only keep you trapped in a matrix that you did not create, a mere pawn on a chessboard in the midst of a game you didn't even know you were playing. So I ask you, if you are willing and able, that you join me on this transformative journey, because I cannot and do not want to do it alone. So if this message resonated with you in some meaningful way, please share it with others, those whom it can benefit, and encourage them to share as well, so that we can open up the conversation, and together we might recognize and realize the alchemy of network effects as we explore the intersection of modern art and science through the lens of chemistry, medicine, technology, psychology, and astrology. Abracadabra, this is modern alchemy.